Housing for key workers. Is this the new affordable housing model?
You're listening to the Planning, Environment and Property podcast, brought to you by the members of 39 Essex Chambers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next instalment in our podcast series, Hot Topics in Planning and Environmental Law. Last time, Paul Stinchcombe KC and I discussed the momentum for granting permission for housing in the Green Belt. Today's topic is also housing related. It's affordable housing for key workers. On the 22nd of March, the Secretary of State granted permission for 330 discounted affordable homes for key workers in the Green Belt at Addison Park, Chiswell Green in St Albans. And I'm delighted to be joined by two people who were involved in that decision. Paul Stinchcombe KC, a member of Chambers with a particular specialism in housing appeals and now friend of the show. He led the appeal team. Ian Parker is a planning consultant who, with his brother, Brian, owns McPartland Planning. Ian and his brother have been intimately involved with the development of the key worker proposals. Welcome to the show, Paul and Ian.
Good to be here.
Hi.
So let's kick off. Ian, the proposal was an outline application for the construction of 330 discounted affordable homes for key workers, including military personnel. It's quite an unusual proposal. How did you first become involved?
Brian and I discussed matters housing and planning over many, many years. And throughout life, we often look at things and say, why are people rinsing and repeating the same old idea, hoping it'll improve and not looking for innovation or creativity? And that particular business model, the one that related to development of housing, is failing in a number of places and failing massively. It's failing in, say, Albans, and that's where Brian lives. So it had a local interest. That business model was one which the developer is permitted to build an estate comprising of a majority of open market sales with a minority of social rented housing. It was failing. The open market sales were extraordinarily expensive and out of the reach of most people. Brian knew this. He lived locally. And following an introduction to our client, Brian and I established McPartland Planning, simply to do things differently, because our client wanted to provide housing for military personnel and other local essential workers. The main focus of the client was to provide affordable, accessible homes for local key workers and military personnel.
It may be an obvious question, but what was the particular motivation at this point in time in 2024?
Right. Well, the motivation didn't happen in 2024. The motivation happened some time earlier, but such is the dire state of the planning processes at St Albans Council, it just delayed and delayed. But 2019, take us all back to a country that was stepping out every Thursday at 8 p.m. to bang their pots and pans to say thank you to those essential workers that were providing a national response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Everybody made a noise, and that noise seemed to have quietened down. But our client embraced that noise. He said, I've got land here. Why can't the nurses afford to live around here? And we discussed house prices, and he said, no, do something with my land. Do something creatively. Make it so that we can allow nurses, firefighters, military personnel, all those people are excluded presently. Let them be able to access affordable housing.
And Paul, this is something that then landed on your desk. Was this something that you were particularly excited about?
Much more excited than most things that land on my desk, certainly, and for lots of reasons. I mean, firstly, as some may know, I spent some years away from the bar serving as a Member of Parliament. And so to get involved in a case which was so obviously political in part, trying to deliver housing which was affordable for key workers, but in the Green Belt and in one of the most expensive boroughs in the country, was obviously going to be a challenge that I was up for. The fact that it was so political is fairly obvious what happened, because the week that we were expecting the decision letter from the inspector, we received instead a letter from the government saying that has been called in by the Secretary of State for his personal decision. So obviously such a hot political potato that it had to be made at the highest level. The second reason I was so excited to get involved is my personal and professional career dates back quite significantly in terms of Greenbelt and housing in St Albans, because I was involved in the very first Hunsdon case, the one that kicked off all the debate about Greenbelt and very special circumstances and the whole industry of assessing objectively assessed needs, a Hunsdon case, which was also a St Albans case. And third, I mean, there is undoubtedly something professionally exciting and challenging about promoting something that's not only, to my mind at least, socially beneficial, but so unique that it requires a new evidence base to be developed, a new approach to trying to demonstrate cogently and compellingly that there is a gap here that's not traditionally the affordable housing gap. We're not looking at the needs of the very, very poor. We're looking at the needs here of key workers who couldn't afford to buy in an expensive area, the area that they served, but weren't eligible for affordable rented housing either. So being missed out and excluded altogether. And to try and find an evidence base to prove that there was such a need and that you could meet it was obviously a professional challenge that was quite exciting.
That's brilliant. Well, I hope to come on to the evidence base in a moment, but I note that the site was called Addison Park. Paul, any significance in that?
Oh, very much so. That was, again, chosen, I think, by Brian and Ian. It's not a name of a local village at all. It's named after Dr. Christopher Addison, who was the minister who, in 1919, introduced the very first Housing and Town Planning Act onto the statute books. And he did so in order to build homes fit for heroes after the First World War. And so Addison Park seemed to me, certainly, an entirely fitting name, therefore, for a development which promoted now to meet the housing needs of our latter-day heroes, as Ian has just explained, those who fought on the front line throughout the COVID pandemic but couldn't afford to buy in one of the most expensive boroughs in the country and yet earned too much to be housed in social rented housing there as well.
Ian, is that right? Are you responsible for the name?
Brian is responsible for the name. But yes, I completely and utterly supported it. It just made so much sense. And there was so much tessellation between looking back to post-war 1919 and looking at the COVID pandemic in 2019. You know, it's 100 years. The difference was, I think by 1920, lots and lots of houses had been built already. So we could look back further and say there's still a lot of development learning we can do from 100 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Ian, can I ask you to start us off with a bit of context regarding the need for affordable housing in St Albans? I mean, having read the appeal decision and other decisions relating to that local authority, it's fair to say, isn't it, that the situation is dire in terms of the level of affordable housing need?
I live in the north of England, and it really is quite significantly different. Addison Park could happen anywhere. And unfortunately, when we approached the council, they were more concerned with their absolute statutory obligations regarding housing, but they seemed to prefer particular types of housing. Where they can, they wanted social rented accommodation. But the gap that Paul mentioned, that is absolutely, and once you've seen it, you cannot unsee it. These people, you know, essential key worker, cohabiting with somebody who has an average earnings, they're pretty much excluded from social rented accommodation. Now, where I live, they'd just go out and buy a house. But in St Albans, that is absolutely impossible for them. They simply don't earn enough to buy open market housing, and they earn too much, and they're means tested out and excluded from social rented housing. So something had to change. It's a situation, I believe, has been brought about through the dire delivery of homes in St Albans, and you're creating a massive demand for market housing, and you're relying on that demand to sort of fulfill your hopes for a minority of social rented accommodation. Not very imaginative on behalf of the council.
Well, when you put it like that, Ian, it seems perfectly obvious, doesn't it? But it has actually surprised a number of people that key workers' housing, discounted key workers' housing, meets the definition of affordable housing for the purposes of our national policy. So I think it'd be worth just having a look at the definition in the MPPF, which we find in the glossary of the MPPF. So it's affordable housing is housing for sale or rent for those whose needs are not met by the market, brackets including housing that provides a subsidised route to home ownership and or is for essential local workers, close bracket, and which complies with one or more of the following definitions. And then there are four: there's affordable housing for rent, starter homes, discounted market sales housing, and other affordable routes to home ownership. So, Paul, just with that definition in mind, how were you able to demonstrate that this proposal meets that definition?
Quite easily, really. Firstly, Addison Park specifically is providing a subsidised route to home ownership for essential local workers. And it's doing so through providing discounted market sales housing. Under the MPPF definition, to qualify as discounted market sales housing, you've got to be discounted by at least 20%. Addison Park, they were discounting it by at least 33%. And also, just to round this off, although there are a variety of forms and categories of affordable housing, including the social-oriented housing that's designed to provide housing, quite rightly, for those in most dire need, the MPPF doesn't rank any form of housing, affordable housing, over any other. They all qualify equally, so great is the need for all of those forms of affordable housing. And as I've just explained, the need for discounted market sales housing, where people want to get onto the housing market, in other parts of the country would be able to do so, but in certain parts of the country can't afford to do so, even though they're providing key local services to that local area. That is a need that quite rightly falls to be met.
Ian, would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I completely agree with Paul. And the MPPF doesn't rate one form of affordable housing over another. And that's why we were particularly disappointed when we submitted the application for Addison Park to be asked by the council to remove all references to local key workers, including military personnel. That was utterly bonkers as far as we were concerned. Needless to say, Brian failed to comply with that request, and we didn't remove it, and we fought all the way through to make sure that the very thing that Paul's described, Addison Park, is designed to meet those needs of local essential key workers and military personnel.
I mean, sitting here today and having read the appeal decision, speaking to you both, it's very hard to understand why this proposal would not be seen as a good thing per se. Paul, were there any arguments made against the appeal proposal by the council? And if so, what were they and how did you deal with them?
Well, there were the traditional usual candidates. This was inappropriate development in the green belt and on open countryside land with a landscape impact. That's inherent to any housing development, essentially meeting housing needs in St. Albans. But so far as the particular business model and affordable housing that we were proposing was concerned, yes, the council eventually conceded at the inquiry that the affordable housing we were offering was a benefit of sorts. They clearly submitted, and very powerfully submitted as far as they were concerned, that it wasn't the preferred model, that a mixture of market housing and affordable rent would be preferable. And they gave two reasons essentially for that. First, they argued that the provision of housing solely for key workers wasn't going to meet the MPPF objective of creating mixed and balanced communities. And second, they pointed out that not all key workers would be able to afford to buy even after a 33% discount was applied. And so development wasn't helping to meet those in most and greatest housing needs. So those are the two in principle objections they had to the affordable housing that we were offering.
And so what was the response that you and the team put together in terms of dealing with those objections?
Well, as for the first objection, we pointed out that Addison Park would actually begin to address some of the imbalance which was inherent to the current situation. Because the current situation in St. Albans is one, for the reasons that Ian and I have explained, one in which large numbers of essential workers are simply priced out of market home ownership in St. Albans, whilst also being ineligible for affordable rented accommodation also. So the preferred model of St. Albans simply excludes them from being able to live in St. Albans at all. And Alison Park was designed to enable those nurses, teachers, police officers, firefighters, local government officers and the like to be able to live in St. Albans in houses that they owned. And remember, those kinds of people that I just described, they're not just part of a balanced community, but they provide the actual services upon which a properly balanced community completely depends. So that's how we dealt with the allegation that it was an imbalance. As for whether the proposed housing was affordable, well, we've already dealt with the definition of that in policy terms. But if we're looking at the real-world housing needs of key workers, especially in St. Albans, and the extent to which the Addison Park model would help to meet them, the simple and proved reality at the inquiry was that in St. Albans, if the household income exceeds £70,000, that household has no access to affordable housing for rent at all. Household income of just £50,000 excludes access to even two-bed housing in St. Albans. But any of those households earning between £50,000 and £70,000 wouldn't be able to buy either. And we proved also that there were, and this was mostly, I have to say, through the evidence of Annie Jingle from Tetlow King, who was brilliant, we proved that there were many thousands of key worker households serving St. Albans who were in that category, you know, the hidden middle, as it were, of key workers whose housing needs were simply being unmet in St. Albans. But that if the market price of housing, median housing, or lower quartile housing was reduced by a third, as we proposed, very many of those key worker households with incomes in that range would now be able to buy. So Addison Park was actually offering an access to a housing ladder in St. Albans for nurses, for policemen, for teachers, that otherwise would simply not be available to them.
And those are, of course, arguments that were subsequently accepted by the Secretary of State, who gave, obviously, very significant weight to the nature of the housing you were promoting. Ian, this is a very different model, as you've already alluded to, from using market housing to deliver a percentage, whatever it is, 33%, something like that, to deliver the affordable housing. So in terms of viability, how is a landowner able to viably develop using this model?
The client's been quite clear. He owns the land. Usually that land is then sold once planning permission is granted. And that's a premium price, and that will be added to a final sale of any properties. Before I came onto this podcast, I quickly checked locally. I do live in the north. New houses. And new houses, four-bedroom houses, £450,000, £400,000. It's completely and utterly different. But when we spoke to the client and we said, okay, you've got land, but even if we built houses on your land, the very people that Paul's just alluded to, they can't afford them, then I'll discount them. I will discount them. Nobody sells their back garden to a builder to have an extension built to the rear of their house. So if I don't have to sell the land in the first place, the developer doesn't have to absorb those costs in the first place, we can look at something different. He wanted to address, we didn't understand at the time because we hadn't done all the research, but the gap between, as Paul's just alluded to, the gap between being excluded from social rented housing and being unable to afford local market housing, that gap is where many, many people fell. But essentially, so did our local key workers. So we were quite keen to develop a scheme that was viable. All too often, I see developers, and they'll go back to say, we can't deliver all the social houses that we said we would because the scheme's no longer viable. They will argue a 60% market housing, yeah, we can make some profits on that, but the 40% social housing, we're essentially losing money on it. Well, if you stop and look at Addison Park, it's 100% sales. Might be discounted sales, but it's 100% sales. So you get more of a bang for your buck. The council resiled against this, didn't particularly like this type of housing. But improvement isn't the enemy of perfection here. We wanted to address something that was fundamentally wrong and brought about by a dire delivery of housing locally. And we could do that. So we wanted to make sure that we made them affordable for the nurses, dentists, pharmacists, teachers, all of those people who are providing that local service. Why should they have to live away from the communities they serve? So by not having to sell his land and commission developers directly, Addison Park is a viable scheme despite the discounted routes to home ownership.
Well, that was really interesting to hear, you know, to ask the crass question, well, look, can money be made? And I think what you're saying is, yes, it can, so long as you've got a willing landowner. Is that fair?
I think that is fair. You've got to think outside the box. You've got to be realistic. You can't max out the profits on this like you might do on other developments. We're looking to work in a commissioned way with developers to ensure that the profit is shared. Our client, quite frankly, could make more money just selling his land. But that's not what he wants to do. He wants to make sure that he can provide a legacy locally for those key workers and give them access to home ownership. And nobody else is providing that. Annie Jingle provided terrific evidence at the inquiry. Paul Stinchcombe was absolutely spot on with his arguments. It was very interesting for me to look at it. But if I'm absolutely honest, Victoria, I was scratching my head an awful lot because I was thinking, who the hell pays that much for houses? When I see them up north, someone's got to tell me why a house, a four-bedroom house, can be built and sold at a profit for £400,000. Well, that same house can be built elsewhere in the UK for the same price. It's the land values, and they have been skyrocketing because of poor delivery of housing for decades.
Well, as a Londoner, I'm asking the same question. So, Paul, this appeal was conjoined with another one, which had a much more conventional model. So market housing, delivering a policy compliant level of affordable housing, both in the Green Belt in St Albans and both allowed by the Secretary of State. But do you envisage that there might be circumstances where a sort of classic market housing scheme with policy compliant affordable housing would not get permission, i.e. not demonstrate very special circumstances, but 100% affordable for key workers might be able to demonstrate those very special circumstances?
Yes, I can. I mean, these questions are all matters of planning and judgment for the decision maker, of course, and what weight they give to the different material considerations. But on our Addison Park proposal, the Secretary of State agreed with an inspector who said that the scheme, the Addison Park scheme, was unquestionably a positive aspiration that would go a long way towards boosting the council's supply of affordable housing in the context of great need. And I attach very substantial weight to that proposed housing. So clearly, weight was being attached, additional weight was being attached, precisely because of the needs that we were seeking to be met, which would not be met by the conventional model. And the inspector and the secretary again agreed with him, went on to say that the weight was not diminished by the council's assertion that some key workers wouldn't be able to afford the properties, even after the discount, because he said the evidence, Annie Jingle's evidence, showed clearly that many would. And so it does strike me that there is additional weight that can be argued for this particular model. And as Ian said, it also strikes me that that model, whereby the affordable housing that you're offering is discount market sales housing, especially if it's aligned to meeting the needs of key workers who are otherwise placed out of the area that they serve, does strike me that that model is potentially transportable elsewhere. We now have a Secretary of State decision, a called-in decision, approving the model. We now have a Secretary of State decision granting permission for 330 homes in the Greenbelt. And there must be other locations where the housing need is similarly great, where the affordability ratio is also very high, where the hidden middle of workers, especially key workers, who are priced out of an area is substantial, and where the profits are still enough for even mainstream developers to be interested in promoting something similar.
Ian, is that something you'd agree with? I mean, you're obviously an advocate for this model, so I think I probably know the answer. But, you know, from your point of view, is this something that can be replicated elsewhere?
Yes. And to just pick up on the point that Paul made, if I was talking a couple of months ago, I would have said, yeah, I believe, I hope, I would expect developers to show an interest in this sort of model. I can now say I absolutely know for certain that developers are showing an interest in this model because the people have approached us. It's as simple as that. Once you've seen that gap, and once you've seen that no particular type of affordable housing, it's an umbrella term, ranks above another one, I'm expecting developers now to take a big step back and start challenging the councils and start saying, well, actually, we can develop a site, we can put more affordable housing on, just not necessarily the type that you would prefer because of your particular statutory obligations. The councils ought to now be waking up and thinking outside of the box instead of rinsing and repeating the same old business model that in St. Albans has certainly helped lead to the problems that they have.
Thank you. This sounds like the beginning of something very exciting, and it's been a privilege to talk to you both today. So, Paul and Ian, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast, and thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next time with another topic, which is the assessment of greenhouse gases and how their cumulative impact should be assessed by the Secretary of State, and I'll be joined by Rose Grogan, who's a friend and colleague in Chambers.
Thanks for listening. At 39 Essex Chambers, we cover a vast array of practice areas and sectors. You can find out more about our expertise and our barristers at 39essex.com, where you can also see our extensive catalogue of articles, podcasts, and webinars.